Evening, everybody. It's good to have you here. So the subject of tonight's talk is taken from messages from Michael, or was originally mentioned by us when we were back on the causal plane, in response to a question. And the topic is called The Balanced Man, or now to be more appropriate, The Balanced Human. And why it's significant right now has to do with the fact that a lot of old souls, present company included, are looking much more at the fifth internal monad, that departure from your life in terms of doing and karmas and monads, and really entering into the period where you're recognizing and embracing that part of what we might call your true work or life task. Now, for those of you who aren't familiar with that term, please understand that life task and even true work doesn't necessarily mean anything to do with an occupation or anything to do necessarily with a line of work or a profession. Generally, what it is some objective relative to inner spiritual seeking, although about half the time people, essences, will make that a journey that is learned through the accomplishment of some external worldly goal. Like in the case of an interesting old soul example, Abraham Lincoln's task was to make sure that the Union stayed mended. Okay, because the agreements that he had with, by the way, some transcendental beings even, had foreseen the fact that divergence called the Civil War was going to happen, and that it would have taken humankind quite a step backward into earlier soul ages. And that was not the parallel that the souls that colluded on this trick called the Civil War were intending for this particular parallel. So, in any case, that's an example there. Now, we come again back to this concept of, of the balanced man or balanced human, and we want to define exactly what it means, first and foremost. For those of you who are familiar with this teaching and these concepts, you know that we've put out before our personality trait system called the overlays. And when we talk about the balanced human, then, what we're talking about is essentially a human being that is no longer constrained or refined to their specific overlays that they chose this lifetime. Now, we use the word constraint in there because, specifically, remember the idea that even though overlays are chosen predilections, preferences, the role being the one that is most central to all lifetimes and consistent, why they are chosen is to kind of equip a personality with a guidance system and a way of presenting itself in line with pursuing, generally, life task. So any number of combinations, say the goal of dominance for somebody who's wanted to learn issues about leadership or being in a hierarchy or how to work with other people. They may choose then a mode, however, that is somewhat either complementary or contradictory to that particular goal. And a complementary one, say, might be and one that has been widely used when it's been paired up in history, and that's called aggression mode. It's complementary in that it has such thrust that it brings the person in dominance to the forefront. Of course, you have many examples of that. Adolf Hitler, Napoleon, to name just a couple. You have a current dominance and power mode person in Russia, in Vladimir Putin, as an example. Now, a contradictory mode, for instance, might be something like caution mode, where the person is reluctant or hesitant to engage that particular goal, that impetus. So when we're talking about then a personality, we're talking about a vehicle that is shaped to naturally sort of blend into various acculturated or social settings and situations with a certain behavioral style. and a certain way of thinking and digesting information. Well, when you think about the idea of the personality on the physical plane, needless to say, the entirety of the physical plane has been designed for an essence to get into material form, into its most real duality and separation, in that you have separate bodies and you don't energetically merge with one another. And in doing that, those individual identities and specific containers called your bodies, the guidance system then of the overleaves is designed to help you to kind of like have a way of being. And since separation causes so much insecurity for the personality, that aloneness that happens, which is why you get things like chief features, or what we call the ego defense mechanisms, to try and protect oneself against the kind of animal vulnerability that is present, because after all, your bodies are the evolved containers from your simian ancestors. The consciousness that run them, that have made you into sentient beings, or raised this body into sentience, however, of course, is because of your emergence past the high soul capacity and into this individual ability to experience other planes of awareness. And when we say other planes of awareness, of course, we're talking about what we've referenced in the past as higher-centered experiences. And we'll talk more about higher-centered experiences as we go along with this, but of course, to have a higher-centered experience is to touch in to that sense that the veil, or what we call the Maya of the physical plane, being a limited kind of a field that creates a veil of separation. That, of course, is facilitated and helped by being in a body. But in fact, that when in those higher-centered moments, there is a transcendence beyond realizing that limitation. When it was put to us in a question and answer period back in the 70s about the nature of true personality, the question was phrased in such a way as to direct us to acknowledge something that generally was, we would consider, say, so far afield, in not so much in its possibility, but that in its probability for a person in a body. So we're just going to kind of recap that for a moment. First of all, to make the reference, this comes from page 238 from the original Messages from Michael book that Chelsea Quinn Yarbrough did. And the only mention that was asked of us that really elicited this. So the idea has to do with when a person is facing that experience of separation. Many of you, all of you to a great degree, being Michael students, remember that one of our basic premises is that, of course, when you're in a body, you feel separate. You feel, you can feel alone. And there, when you feel alone, of course, then not just lonely, but also vulnerable to other. So in that particular case, one is, we say, is in false personality, which is the negative pole of the overleaves and the activated ego defense structures of chief feature. That's the most feeling of isolation. Generally speaking, that's also what we would say is a person, when in the extreme, a person feels most instinctive, which is instinctive center, that is, which is the kind of a recall of their native animal survivalistic experiences. Well, flipping that all over then, the answer to the opposite question is, well then, what is the maximum capacity, or what is the potentiality for a person actually living in a body to experience, given the fact that you are still in an individual spacesuit? And we define that as true personality. Now, true personality means being in all the positive poles of your overleaves, but also having no chief feature of any kind, and then lastly, having gone through the transcendent experiences of a higher center kind of transformation. So bringing in that idea then now, just to bring to talk about higher centers again and this true personality. You see, folks, a kid could be raised absolutely perfectly, never have any sense of fear, feel a part of a community, all the things that by definition would allow them to feel nurtured or safe or naturally have emerge the expression of their positive poles of their overleaves. But a higher centered experience then is the one that launches them and puts them, to borrow a term that Stephen uses, into meta space, like used in the term metaphysics. In other words, to see behind the veil completely. Because just because one participates here on the physical plane and may not have a chief feature, which, by the way, about 5 to 8% of the people on the planet literally can completely do without any of those particular strategies. They often will appear as rather, well, balanced people, but insofar as that there is no, great persona about them. And by great, we don't mean great in the sense of accomplished. We mean one that is peculiar or tries to project an air of uniqueness or in any way tries to adorn itself. There's no grandiosity or seeking of glamours whatsoever. Person just is. Okay. Now, the higher centered experiences, however, we're going to get beyond true personality, to get to the balanced man station, happens when a person does that classically known concept of the descent into self. The book Dante's Inferno really is a very profound story and allegory about the descent deep into self and the disillusion and the coming out the other side. You know, in biblical terms, it's often referred to having traveled into the valley of the shadow of death and then come out the other side. You see, higher centered experiences happen when there is either extreme ecstasy or agony. Now, agony doesn't always have to be physical, but quite frequently, in fact, it literally is a precursor to one of these higher centered experiences. For those of you who have ever heard of the author Viktor Frankl, who wrote a book post World War II about his experiences in the Nazi death camps called Man's Search for Meaning. He was an individual who experienced higher centered experiences through the descent into agony. And from that, what agony and ecstasy both do, and as a caveat, it's the reason that people take particularly the psychedelic drugs, but also the heavy depressants as well, is since higher-centered experiences correspond to brain chemistry states, like endorphins and epinephrines and dopamine and serotonin and what have you, in high concentrations, some of them as painkillers. When a person's body gets so overwhelmed with pain, they reach that high. Now, all the martyrs of history, all the extreme aesthetics, Jesus and Buddha, for instance, even though they were infinite souls, we'll just use them, when they had some of their most arduous physical trials, say like Jesus' 40 days in the desert, or the Buddha under the Bodhi tree facing Mara, the representation of evil, And then also him being an aesthetic and, you know, being virtually skin and bones. Those extreme situations, while certainly not comfortable by any stretch, is the crucible. It is the valley that is crossed. That if a person can survive that, they have an experience of a depth of self, but also a depth of being temporarily disconnected from the body while being totally connected with the body. And so those higher centered experiences are the last, if you will, ladder, part of the ladder, that then elevates a person from just a true personality, all in the positive pole of their overleaves and soul age and so forth, into that higher perspective where what happens at that point is they shed themselves of the need or the restrictions of proclivities, preferences, habit strength of any one given set of overleaves. And in fact, can become so centered in self as a result of that experience that suddenly what happens to them is instead of the overleaves being like an overlay, i.e. the name, of course, where it is, if you will, an energetic costume that one wears, you can imagine then that all the robes come off and that the person stands comfortably naked with their true self, their exposed, vulnerable essence coming through the body. And then all of that, of those overleaf energies then, become like, if you will, standing in the middle of a circular garment rack. And a person can reach out at any given moment then and put on the garment, the appearance thereof, of any of these given overleaves. So it's like saying that even if a person who understands that they are a role in essence can still have the fluidity to be able to adopt the strategy, the point of view and the way of being of another role, even while still being, if you will, on the axis of their own native role. But the more important aspects of it, of course, we're talking about the other categories of overleaves, which are the goal, the attitude, the mode. At this point, chief feature is irrelevant in the sense that a person is not possessed by any need for defenses. But a person who has reached the balance man can reach in as a tool, as a strategy, again, as one of these garments, at will, and utilize them if they so need. Is it likely that they would dip into a chief feature perspective or defended place? The answer is no, but they could if they chose to use it. And then what they are able to do is go through, their centers then are totally balanced, and they are able to merge their ordinal center, which would be ordinal intellectual, ordinal emotional, ordinal moving, with its counterpart of higher intellectual, higher emotional, and higher moving. Now, let me be very clear, if you will, because it's important to understand that, if you will, the cosmic or psychic energy of living at the higher centers, what some yogis attempt to do, like live in that blissed out state, as it's probably, you know, euphemistically called, don't really do it, even though they can sustain it for longer periods. And they sustain it, however, through longer periods. Yes, granted, by living through the positive pole of their overleaves, but also by doing a strategy, you know, called either renunciation, or complete hermitage in a monastic lifestyle, so that there is a essentially it's the goal of reevaluation being played out and a more or less a withdrawal from the stimulus of the outside world. Now, there have been There have been probably several thousand people in the history of the world who have reached the balanced man state. Almost all of them have been in the old soul range. A couple of mature souls, but none in the earlier. Now, you might ask why. Well, some of you, of course, are probably automatically, intuitively getting, well, for one thing, you're not the, when you're talking about infant, baby, and young souls, you're not talking about particular subgroups who are interested in shedding any of their overleaves. It would be a spiritual quest or even idea that would be so expansionary in letting go of many of the trappings of the physical plane in Maya, where those soul ages are completely immersed in those lessons. So we haven't seen one in the scanning of history that we've done, all right? But when we talk about old souls now, and again, even some late, you know, the few late-level matures that we've had some reckoning with, is what's happened is you all know that our theory of personality development and creation, cosmology of the universe, is based on the notion that you as an eternal essence, excuse me, soul, don't do everything in one lifetime. Say like the Abrahamic religions of Judaism, Christianity, and Islam, where supposedly every life experience is just it, and then your soul goes onward. You know, of course, we say that with an eternal essence, it is constantly growing, constantly evolving, and constantly acquiring information. And there's just no way that it is possible for an individual to actually get enough of the huge variety of experiences that are here. And when we say the huge variety of experiences for structural purposes, we're talking about, of course, to perform all 33 monads, at least, you know, with one other person. And in fact, generally, a soul will do all the monads with probably a dozen people. And so having this great diversity. And a monad, of course, often takes more than one lifetime. I mean, for a person just on one side of the monad. And of course, a monad is a bidirectional. It's a duet, working together, learning some particular themes of human experience. So you need more than one life, so this is a reincarnational teaching. And in that reincarnation, of course, you acquire information from previous lives. You know, this notion of the past life experience. Well, sometimes, to say that in every case, one of the, shall we say, base-level experiences that one acquires in a lifetime is trying on a particular set of overleaves. So specifically, we're not just talking about the physical plane experiences of becoming rich or being killed in a war or being a fairy princess or you know, dying of a childhood disease or all the many, many variants that human beings try on as far as actual, say, plot lines or themes in life. But trying on overleaves and getting the feel for them where you actually say, oh, I understand how power mode works. And so that there is a memory, if you will, there is an experience set, there's a reference card in your personal Akashic library drawer that says, oh, yeah, this is what power mode looks like. Whereas by, say, baby soul times, a person may not even literally have tried on certain overlays yet. So it would be literally impossible for them not to only to in any way expand to do others, because chances are they're often in false personality to some extent or another, but they wouldn't be able to go utilize those things even if they were in their own true personality, because they didn't have experience of it. So again, this explanation is to try and put into context why it's much more likely that an old soul, and even again, go steps further, an older soul, an older level soul, actually reaches this point. So to take it out of suspense and to help you experience, to help you give you a real life understanding of a person who lived this, you'll all recognize this name. And we're talking about the old priest warrior, Nelson Mandela. Okay? Sixth level, ended, finished his sixth level lessons this particular lifetime, but he reached the balanced man state. If not just his level of compassion, but his ability to play king, in the early, in the early parts of his days, you know, there was native warrior qualities there anyway, so those were very prominent. But once he transcended, and how did he do it? He had 27 years worth of hell that put him and elevated him to the highest levels of higher centered experiences. Does that make sense to everyone? Can you feel that, even just thinking about the man and thinking about the icon he became as far as the magnanimity of what he could have come out as? And when, in fact, most human beings, when they undergo that kind of devastating set of physical tortures and experiences, often come out hard or shattered or broken. He literally came out transcendent. And then took that transcendent to a much bigger arena and help the country transcend. So we offer, offer Mandela as an example of a real life manifestation of a balanced human who managed to get to that that place and that space. In terms of another icon, I suppose, if you want to call her that, even with all her flaws and foibles, and there's a lot out there to talk about that, was the woman who became known as Mother Teresa, the second-level old server. And for her, having to adopt more characteristics than just, the bowing and, I want to help people. She was a butt kicker, that little woman. And she knew how to deal with power. And so when she got through a number of the times, because early in her career, she was beat up, pretty badly. And in that, from that beating is when she had her, her actual pain-oriented epiphany. And we say pain-oriented epiphany because remember what we've also said, that you can have ecstasy-oriented epiphanies. But somehow, those often, and it's an interesting way that the physical plane seems to work, that there is something deeply profound to the animal self about pain that makes things seem more real than something that is pleasurable. And of course you see that then, the ripple effects of that belief system out there everywhere. How many people, in spite of how much society right now completely exists economically by selling you various forms of self-indulgence and ways of assuaging pain and or numbing it, and or entertainments to supposedly raise you higher. Nonetheless, almost all the, many of the world's religious belief systems still pretty much have an undertone, well, that kind of indulgence is either sinful, or can lead to temptation. Well, we just mentioned that again as a caveat because she, early in her life, is when she had a higher centered experience where she was visited by her first guide. Of course, it came in the guise of looking like the traditional angel with the big wings and the rest of that sort of thing. But nonetheless, it was that positive side ecstasy version of the higher centered experience. The beating was the negative side. That one really toughened her. That is the one that she chose and was able to start ratcheting. Now, by the way, we're not saying that she was in the balanced human position of transcending all her positive poles or transcending the overleaves for her entire career or even directly after that. I mean, it was really near the last few years of her life where that degree of of freedom from any kind of bindings of how she had to appear really began to emerge. So we just give you two examples. And of course, the nice thing about it is that while certainly you could ask more questions about them and, you know, to investigate it from, you know, our using our terminology and so forth, nonetheless, it's, you can read the substance of all that by virtue of the many books that are about the two people. You know, good literary sources are often better than a historical source in some ways, simply because of the fact that in bringing a literary spin to reporting, there's often a more humane vein that's revealed. But nonetheless, with those readings, you can find, oh yes, that's a good example. That sounds like it right there, and that sort of thing. So far then, the balanced human, and that's what it is. And the reason, again, to come back to finish the thought we introduced. So why now? And the simple answer is because, particularly within older souls, especially since most of the older soul population on this planet are in the American baby boomer generation, you all are wanting to retire. You're all literally kind of wanting to kind of move off, you know, the field of engagement. Now, there's a pro and a con to that. In the sense of this way we mean it. The pro is that actually by disengagement from a lot of the worldly tensions and concerns and engagements, you actually have more of an ability to begin to transcend the need for these personality traits, your persona, the Tom that shows up and is always gregarious and tells a joke and so forth, that it can go to the wayside and he can be more just there and present, which, by the way, has emerged more from you in the last 5 years. And how has it emerged? Well, certainly as you've turned, you know, as you've gotten older, but nonetheless, in your last 10 years, you know, you've been through a whole lot of whoppings that have brushed you up against, you know, higher centered experience. Because it is the descent. It is not going into pain and staying there. It is actually going so deeply in the pain that you literally hit the bottom, and then it gets moved beyond. Now, that's a very, for a person who can achieve that, who can come out the other end, and that's why we recommended Viktor Frankl's book. He himself did not become a balanced man, but it elevated his awareness, and he jumped from late mature to early old in that lifetime. So that in itself was a huge leap forward in his evolution. And again, how did it happen? Because he went through the descent, the psychological, emotional descent, in this case, motivated with under severe physical hardship, and then was able to actually get kicked into those chemical states where suddenly the awareness of the universe, because the veils literally come down. That's why psychedelic experience is so interesting to some, so transformational to some, and so terrifying to others. Is when they see the veils come down, it's suddenly this vulnerability of being in what they're perceiving as a great void instead of a great vastness of all that is. Some who can embrace that have, of course, then sometimes gone overboard. And Howard, would you be in favor, or one of you guys would close that door? Thank you. I'm seeing the icicles grow off of Jan's nose here, and I wanted to just honor that. So, for you as individuals at this point, the possibility of actually looking at yourselves and being able to find the ways to first drop the need for any one way of yourself showing up. Now, that's anchoring, that's literally the first stage of dropping chief features. Because that means there's no requirement and no constriction. Because that's what a requirement is. Is a constriction. And constriction is usually held in place by fear. Fear is what activate the chief features and, you know, hold them in place as a way of coping with the world. And of course, you know, those chief, all of them and are not only recognizable out there and in culture all the time, but many of them are rewarded, particularly in the, currently the ones of greed is the highest one that's rewarded, probably followed by those who are you know, in leadership positions, by impatience. So, in other words, culturally, there's a lot of reinforcement. There's a lot of reward for staying and continuing to maintain chief features. But for you, then, taking yourselves out of the mainstream and being in positions where you find yourself not needing to prove anything, to put it in more common terms, all of those kind of inner drives, those fear-oriented states, then they peel away, the pressure goes down, and then the reflection happens. Let's call it, in the triad, getting from negative to neutral. And in neutral, you sit there and just go, okay, well, you know, now what? What is this? The positive would not necessarily mean, well, I'm going to act this way or be this way. When you enter into true personality, it's more like coming in, I embrace this sense of boundlessness, instead of having just a willingness to stand there and gape at it. Not afraid of it necessarily, but just kind of confused by it. Because remember, confusion is the negative pole of growth. So when that happens, then there's that embrace. In other words, getting to the positive pole of acceptance. You come into true personality, and in true personality, at your old soul stage, is at, since all of you are in, you know, are in, or your fifth internal monads, or approaching your sixth, then at that, in that stage, you have the last, not the last possibility, but the greatest opportunity, let's call it, for jumping into the balanced human place. Because the fifth internal monad says, okay, how do I reconcile what I have done with my life? And do I actually feel that what I was, who I was, accomplished some element that is soul satisfying? So, and how do you feel, how do you find that? Simply, can you go inside and honestly just find a peace place? You can find a peace place inside and know it's there. It doesn't mean it's necessarily big, because some people are really involved in the world. There's lots of tension. But if they could feel that core, to use that popular term now, if you can feel that, then that's a good indication that your essence and personality were in sync to actually feel, to actually say, yeah, I got done what I wanted to do here. Does it mean you're going to want to run outside and, you know, go yee-haw and have a celebration, or there's going to be ticker tape parades? The answer is no. But inside of yourself, there will be a sense of, I did okay. I did all right. I have nothing left to prove. Now, then in that space between fifth and sixth internal monads, caveat again, remember in this teaching we've talked about that the internal monads are inner states of conscious awareness that one faces deliberately and actually does a period of reevaluation with each. And because people can be in false personality so deeply, so long, they might not, in a lifetime, even get past the fourth internal monad, which is, by definition, coming into their own true overleaves. Meaning that they're stuck in their persona, their way of being in the world, their, that everything that they do is motivated by external either satisfactions or incentives or rewards or approvals. All those things are out there. A person at the, in that, those lives, and again, quite frequently from about fourth young down, are in those places, aren't going to know anything about these internal monads. But for you old souls and late matures, you guys are at that juncture where these are your raison d'être, let's say. It is your reason for being, to actually you know, where the work, the children, the jobs, the identity, the body type, whether, you know, male or female, you know, healthy and robust or, you know, riddled with various kinds of health problems. Those trappings are usually self-karmas that you're finishing up. But the whole point of all those is to guide you back inward. Does that make sense to everyone? And all of you in here are in that group. So everything we're saying, we know every one of you can like, oh yeah, right, that's what we're doing. Because it's not even so much about having, quote, a spiritual life in the sense that one pursues an externally defined version of it. It's having a spiritual life in that you are constantly reflecting back to that core and testing, where am I in relationship to it? So as you do then this transition in your own between fifth and sixth monads, this idea of balanced man, first of all, we just want to say, hey, it's possible. But not only that, it's not all or nothing. And that's the thing that we want you most to understand, that it doesn't have to be all or nothing. There is no cosmic, you know, brownie pin on the other end of it that you're going to get for attaining, you know, the balanced human status. It is just one of the many ways that Tao can orchestrate having the experience of being in a body that's completely different from, say, the main aggregate of, you know, humans that it works through. And the main difference, in case we haven't made this clear in a precise way, is that when there's an absence of overleaves and an absence of fear, that person recognizes otherness, but not separation. Comprehend the distinction? Mm-hmm. In other words, I can see Jan sitting over there in another body, you know, 6 feet away, and recognize she's in an other body, another literal physical location in three-dimensional space. But as far as separation, as far as our awareness of our common humanity, our spiritual connectedness, that sort of thing, it is a certainty rather than a belief. Get the distinction? Mm-hmm. When there is a certainty, it is, and every once in a while, certainty is, by the way, often what comes about, believe it or not with higher intellectual center experience, but with higher moving center experience. Because that it's totally embodied, there is a sense of pure oneness because of the Buddhaic energy of it. And when that vibration then hits, which, by the way, is one of the other reasons that was motivated to deal with this talk tonight, because this year, 2014, is higher moving centered energy. On a more practical level, it can feel like a very slippery kind of energetic year for people because it's so fluid. But when it's embodied and centered, it literally can feel, you know, like it erases any kind of sense of doubt, imbalance, even any level of one might consider dis-ease or unhealth. But because they're higher-centered experiences, again, generally, you know, they're fleeting and or they're short-lived. You know, sometimes as long as, say, like a half an hour for someone who's seriously in a moment of a truly transcendent experience. Probably the most easy way in the physical plane for a woman to actually have a higher-centered experience, two ways actually, is one, on the agony part, give birth. On the ecstasy part, have a tantric orgasm. That would be for a female. For a man, it would be on the agony part, it would be in full-out immersion into total aggression. There is if any of you who have ever played any kind of contact sports know that there are those moments where that total exertion of self, the masculine energy in a masculine container, through testosterone, because remember we said higher centered experiences are all related to brain and body chemistry, gives that male a feeling of that total unified sense of the animal self with the greater part of who you are. And then getting back for males again, for higher centered experience, is on the ecstasy side, is also through really intensive sexual contact. But generally, it is, even though that when we say that, we want to make sure that that's probably only about 1 in 20 times. Because for males particularly, because of the wiring, because of the masculine, you could say that, you know, masculine energy in any person is conducted through testosterone. And feminine energy through males or females is conducted through estrogen. Okay. And of course, people who are high masculine energy in a male body are natural producers of high quantities and are running that. On the other extreme, women who are high feminine energy in a female body are high estrogen types. Okay. But most people are somewhere mixed. That somewhere mixed is that 19 out of 20 people or men. And so for them to reach a sense of getting out of their heads, intensive orgasm may be a way of doing that. But it really takes that the two other components, that the feminine side is much easier to access. That is the higher emotional center of actually experiencing love in the moment, whether you're in love with the person or not in the romantic sense. And then the other one is to be totally there in the higher intellectual center, which is a state of feeling total equality and two people meeting of minds in a place of no disguise. When that happens, then that is the kind of ecstatic, higher moving centered experience that a man can have. So as you enter this period, your six internal monads are coming in for a few of you. Couple of you, Ted, to a certain degree, Stephen, are in fifth internal monads, you know, trying to sort out, okay, so, you know, I'm in the midst of it still. How do I kind of, you know, deal it? You to some extent as well, Russ. But you two definitely are really in really brushing up against your sixth internal monad, which has said, so what have I derived from this place? What has this place really meant for me? This place meaning physical plane, being the Tom and the Jan spacesuit that you are this lifetime. What has it meant? So it's a real turnaround and assessment. And in that turnaround and assessment, there is another opportunity, another springboard for a place of transcendence, another place of not having to be anything. When you look at younger souls and you see the ranks of the elderly, like especially those, say, in nursing homes, it's the vast majority are those who are still in the throes of either their false personalities or who've gotten to the point where they have so much regret that it either comes out in disease or the dementia that literally keeps them from, you know, having essence contact with themselves on a conscious level, by the way. Because some people who have had lives that are good lives that are not, you know, feeling, that don't have this sense of regret or any of the other things, can actually be rather bubbly and childlike. So, you know, not to try and bias the perception that everyone in who's elderly necessarily is, and who has any kind of disease state or needs infirmed cares in any way, and the negative poles of things are wrapped up in that. We would not intend to say that. We would not mean that. It is to simply say that we use that as an example because those are ones that are common images that people call to mind that you've all experienced to some extent. And then the people who are bitter, of course, are the ones then who are still in throes and trapped in that. And they have, if those few that actually might have even literally got to a place where they could come to the, even a glimmering of what the internal assessment of six internal monad is, at that juncture or something close to it, it would have been an assessment where this place was hard, I didn't like it, I failed, it failed me, any number of, you know, related kind of vibration collapsing sort of assessments. And then, of course, the essence doesn't necessarily choose to leave a body just because a person's personality or ego state says, God, I'm ready to die. You know, an essence will keep a body alive a lot of times for long periods, even beyond what the personality deems, you know, useful, worthwhile, and so forth. So as you go through that, you approach your balance, man. It'll bring you more levels of peace, but the thing that is the part in here is just simply it's about coming to grips with that. Probably the one of the biggest hurdles of a personality in the physical plane as a construct, as part of the Maya, is to believe that you have to have an identity. Funny Tom, likable Jan, you know, helpful, what's his name over there? Oh, Lizer, yeah, helpful Russ. You know, he's so fun. He's a king. He can handle it. You know, intellectual, sometimes cantankerous Ted, and so on, you know. Healing, you know, Dr. Hoppy over here, you know. I mean, we've got these different personas. You know, don't worry, Tamwa, we wouldn't leave you out, you know. You know, in your case, it's growing into boss. It's growing into boss. But anyway, so these personas, that they're not who you are. But of course, the whole nature of the, if you will, the mechanics of personality, that's one of the things that kind of is instilled, not just from the outside, but even from the inside, from the Tao itself. Oh, what's an overleaf? Well, it's a chunk of a persona to be in a body with. When that gets let go of, then, and you come to grips with acceptance of the disorientation that, in other words, you don't have to show up in a certain way as a certain person, then you reach the balanced human state. Or at least start in that, you know, much more down that line and down that vector. How it helps the world, and this is the last part of this, and then we'll take questions. Because of the world polarization that has increased in the last couple of decades, most of you who, as we've said, are not going to be in available to, interested in, or participating in, that's any kind of mainstream movement. But now we're going to get into, well, you folks won't mind, but if anyone listens to this tape who's maybe only on the outskirts of the spiritual world, they will consider a little woo-woo. But that is when you're the balanced human, you also become the biggest potential portholes, grounding portholes, for the excess aggravation, fear, and overall hostility that's out there that really needs to be grounded. Now, the more balanced you are, and remember, part of this balancing is when you're unattached to overleaves, that means you become like a fluid channel. Think of a large PVC pipe where water goes through it, but there's no friction on the side. There's nothing that grabs onto it and so forth. It just flows through and grounds. And in many ways, the more that you folks then retire out of the visual world, the workaday world, into your literal retirements, or as you age, literally becoming little yogis on your own, to be a little humorous about it. And no, Tom, don't say, hey, boo-boo. you know we channeled that from him, right? Of course. That you actually will be a person then who, through your work on the through the etheric levels, through the spirit levels, will be supporting the upfront population, those who will be working to actually have the social confrontations, the working in the political arenas, sometimes even helping to channel and actually just holding space for the conflagrations that will come, and there's going to be more as souls make their transition. And so we're kind of like giving you as old souls a little bit of an understanding of what your potential all is, what your contribution can be, the fact that you can begin as far as your transcendence of attachments to form, that it doesn't have to look like anything that is specifically like on a picket line or writing your congressman or anything of that nature. We saved your bed for you, Artis. We knew that's why you were giggling.
No.
Good to have you. In any case, so that potential for you guys also lets you know that you don't have to be anyone or do anything, but the more that you can hold your center in that core and know that your very presence is a contributing factor to a greater state of peace and centeredness on the planet, then you will make a huge contribution. But one, of course, that almost all other soul ages really can't relate to. Because at your soul ages, especially at late level old soul ages, you know, that bridge is already before you. It's a given. You feel it. And so then being able to anchor into that while grounding this helps to create that, you know, that evolutionary space for other soul ages. And that's what's up. Because times are contracting energy is contracting in the same way that a woman has contractions when she is birthing. There's contractions in the human race right now to birth the next stage of human evolution. But only instead of 9 months, you're looking at approximately about a 100-year birth period.
Wow.
Yeah. So, and by that, you know, metaphorically, most of you know we're talking about the emergence from the being birthed out of the young soul era into the mature soul era.
Thank God.
So. Well, in fact, you know, Russ, one of the things we would say in comment to your reaction there, it's to understand that in some ways this apex of human materialism at the height of the young soul era is the most detrimental it's been for the planet. Certainly the cycles of these kinds of behavior have been around since the beginning of human societies. But the sheer concentration and sheer numbers of human beings here doing all those behaviors with the technology and with the diminishing qualities of the planet, we agree with that. You know, into the degree that for those of you who hope to see the world evolve and stay capable of being habitable for humans. For those, Howard, like, for instance, you know, remembering this book, one of the things you remember from more messages from Michael, and has also been said in Joy of Pope and many of the readings by JP, as well as us, is that, you know, many sentient species don't finish on the planet they started. Because they do essentially what you folks are, you know, at this tipping point of, where literally then they, you know, the species has to move off planet, which technologically isn't going to happen for a while. Or what happens is you begin evolving, you know, you as a collective of souls, you begin to form another species and go through the process again. Now, that's not what your species signed up to do. Doesn't mean you can't. You know, yeah, you've got free will. You can screw it up. Your choice, you know, sort of thing. But this is the way that you guys can do what you can do. And that's the path. And these are the definitions. And interestingly enough, it has more to do with letting go than achieving anything. So that's our commentary on the balanced human. Any follow-up questions on that? Yes, Howard and then Tom.
What would... you spoke eloquently about balanced man, yet specifically, what are the exercises we can do to hasten that bringing forth that balanced man? Just like you said, letting go, I understand. But I also think there may be things that we can do as individuals gathered here.
Well, perhaps paradoxically, we're going to use you as that example of your question. Notice the idea of hasten. Hasten is a construct under impatience.
Yeah.
See that? It is literally coming to terms with an acceptance of all that is. A complete... It does not mean you begin, you stop your awareness of places of the pain or the misdirection that others is taking. And it doesn't mean that you yourself can't reorient your own behaviors, your own attitudes, to continue to focus on that direction, but to get worried about it. And to do that is still drawing or tapping out of that same fuel source of fear. And that then channeled through that one specific, again, process or chief feature called impatience that says, hurry up, hurry up, hurry up, we're going to lose. We're going to miss out. And of course, all that verbiage is just about how fear is manifesting specifically. It is literally getting to the point where it's saying it's going on its own pace. You can acknowledge that you may not like it. You can acknowledge that you may feel the sadness and the pain. And indeed, some of that transcendence we talked about is acknowledging those things and not holding them, but knowing that in your acknowledgement of them, the sorrow, the pain, the anger, the aggression, and just be with it and literally imagine it flowing through your body. Now we're getting to your how-to, mm-hmm. in case you're mm-hmm. getting that. Mm-hmm. And literally imagine flowing it. And sometimes, by the way, we want you to know that there are times like Gaia will really take sadness. She can deal with sadness, with loss, with grief. She will take that energy because she is mother. She's feminine. She will transcend that energy and actually use it for a benefit. The rest is masculine, so send it up. So anger, terror, shame, send it up, because the sky, the masculine, will diffuse it. Okay, earth will transform it, sky will diffuse it. And so you as this conduit is bidirectional. So when you become aware of a set of emotional states that are going on because of you tap into some part of the world that may be having some great suffering or what have you, there's a second half to this that you're going to like then too, is that, okay, you just feeling for a second, and all you need to do is, you don't have to even remember this conversation. It will sink down into your body, the sorrowful ones, and they'll go into the earth. You'll feel it. And then the rest will want to come up through your upper chakras anyway and be pushed out. So again, you don't even have to remember the instruction. Now, here's the other part that is perhaps a little bit more joyful and wonderful, is that those moments when you feel or witness parts of what we call the emergent humane being, the one whose native composition is that sense of interconnectedness and respect of otherness, but not feeling separation in it, okay? When you witness those, when you feel those in yourself, and that vibration rises, and that sense of joy, sometimes exhilaration, sometimes just a quiet serenity of tranquility. When those happen, literally just also offer those. And you can do that bi-directionally. Give the earth some, she needs it. Things that, on more mundane ways, people can have those experiences when they look around and see that that somebody is growing food in a way that not only employs a community, but everybody feels good about. And the food is great, and it's organic. Those, you know, like a moment of that humane triumph. You can take that basic life force that's being generated off of that, a higher vibrational life force, mind you, and literally then open and expand it and broadcast it. Some of the things that, like Sai Baba, some of his teachings and mechanisms are that way. Believe it or not, even some of, by accident, but still some of the methods used by the Church of Scientology and their approach to their operating Thetan and elevating themselves. Granted, there's some chief feature that's still behind it, but when a person is out of their chief feature and just experiencing the receptivity of the bliss states, then they can still amp it. They can still, you know, send it out. But in this higher state of the balanced man, or this, even better than higher, because that implies, once again, the better than less than. Let's just call it the expanded, less attached, and more harmonically vibrant vibration. That, where the note is clear, there's no discord, and that you can then turn around and be like an echo, a little echo chamber, not just the conduit. So that's our response to you.
Thank you.
Try not to hurry about it.
Do it. My best.
Yeah, just, you know, see if you can, if the things that you want, if there's only one thing in there, just see, oh, well, gee, I didn't do it. Because if you shame yourself, there's another piece of fear there, you know. Oh, God, I didn't do it. I'm not helping, to contribute to the planet. You know, what kind of old soul am I? And before you know it, you know, there's...
We don't know folks
home. So, yeah. So, does that feel complete to you?
Yes, thank you very much.
Okay, good, very good. Tom, your question?
I think I'm reminded of this state, this vibrational state,
mm-hmm.
of... I heard Brad was told a person being in a state where there's a tree and you're sitting against the tree and everybody's running by you and they're running and running and running and suddenly there'll be maybe one person will stop and say, well, how come you're not running? And that's that opportunity you have to say, well, I'm not running because I don't need to run whatever. I'm in a place where I don't have to run. Why do I need to run? Why are you running? Out of fear and question, you have the opportunity to be able to relate to that other person that maybe they're running. It has no real reason. It's a perception of having to run, but not really having to run. They think they have to run from whatever fear they're running from. But I think I find myself being in a place where I'm sitting in that tree, and people are running, run. And I just said, well, okay, you can run, it's okay with me. But if you like to stop and talk about it, here I am. And I found that an interesting image for myself.
Well, there you're talking about, you know, the example of being so still that you draw attention to your stillness.
Mm.
Or, no, excuse me, you don't draw attention to your stillness. Your stillness by itself literally creates a vacuum where people's attention comes to.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of in the energetic vortex of the, you know, cyclical nature of life,
mm-hmm.
and then getting into that groove, as it were. You could think about somebody running around an old LP record, right?
Mm-hmm.
As they were running in the grooves. Those moments and setting the example for that is a very interesting kind of paradox, because your stillness is a very active act of focused attention. Sounds almost, you know, contradictory, but that's what the paradox is in its nature. But as a result of that, it creates its own, as we say, energy vortex, an absence, a vacuum, more specifically, of activity such that anyone who comes up with that, it is unlike anything around it. Therefore, attention goes. Like, wow, that's the difference. Mm-hmm. Now, just to mention one other thing that when in your explanation, there's an assumption you made in there. Not every human being is participating in all of this because they are in some kind of deep existential fear or even necessarily any kind of awareness of real threat to them.
Right.
What's happened is they're completely in the realm of the unconscious, habituated normative qualities here. So they're in the veil. They're in the Maya. And they believe the illusion is what it is without necessarily being in fear of it.
I didn't mean to imply necessarily that everybody's in fear. I know it sounded like that, but I wasn't.
We weren't holding you accountable to that specifically.
Yeah.
We were using that your verbiage to build off of that because it's an important distinction.
Right.
Not that you necessarily were saying it yourself.
Mm-hmm.
We wanted to make sure that it got said in terms of this discussion.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I call it the ant farm.
That's a very apt metaphor. Mm-hmm. Very apt metaphor. It's what we call the hive mind. Now, as ensouled creatures, you're not technically hive minds. You're individual essences now perceiving in uniqueness, what Stevens called, you know, your soloverse. But to the degree to which people take a peek at themselves and do any kind of self-reflection around in there, again, to the degree either a person is highly acculturated or fearful, say, or earlier soul ages. And again, not to rely too much on generalization, just say majority of that is more likely. Because we know some old souls who would have, you know, gone into substance abuse to numb themselves out from anything they've seen there, you know, and keep it dull and not aware to them. It's in those conditions where it's just, you know, they're separated within themselves. They're divided. And it's so healing the inner divides is, you know, really the way that a person who comes across as not trying to prove anything, to use common vernacular, is the one that is often most intriguing by lack of doing anything. So,
is that the portal you're talking about? I mean, when you said portal, I was thinking, well, taking on the energy of everybody else, but that's not what you're talking about.
We don't mean to take it on. We mean that you can become a literally a channel of it, as to pull it out of the using Rupert Sheldrake's term, the morphogenetic field of humanity, the great collective consciousness and unconsciousness. Mm-hmm. You can serve as a vent pipe because of your awareness that it actually even exists.
Mm-hmm.
And by willingly then allow it to just flow through, but you're directing. You're not taking it in.
Mm-hmm.
You're not acting as the filter. Again, you're acting as the channel, the conduit, just the delivery mechanism from one space to the next.
Mm-hmm.
And what'll tell you when you notice where you may have some things unresolved to yourself as one is approaching this balanced man place is where the energy then becomes resident for a while. And it may call up a like energy inside of yourself to a memory you have that may be a situation or a place of something unhealed or unresolved, unforgiven, and so forth. And then you can add that into the stream and then send that through too. And each time it then expands you a little more and then helps you drop off little bits of your own personal stuff that may be residue. And of course, you know, unless a person is a truly transcended, complete last level, seventh old in their last lives, who has consciously come to grips with the pains that they suffered and know that and have the ability to, because the balanced man, it's not to say that they are going to suddenly miss out on the rest of the world. They'll have their griefs, they'll have their ecstatic joys, they'll have their moments, they'll have things like that. But it's completely fluid, completely, it is completed in the period of time they're having their emotion. So there is no residue. What most people consider, you know, a life memories is those compounded residues of emotionally poignant experiences, positive ones and the negative ones. And then the internal little switches called decisions that a person has made based on those pains or joys that then further move them down a way of being. And what happens at the near the balance man point is all the switches are wide open. And they don't care to play with them anymore. That's just there. So did that help you with the energetics of it?
Yes, definitely. Thank
you. Yeah, because there is that, there in the beginning of the energetics, especially in the West when it was brought, a lot of people made the mistake of, oh yes, bring it into your heart. And what the mistake in that was is that, you know, you were using yourself as the filter. And no, it's not about that. It's about opening your chakras vertically rather than horizontally. And again, then letting it be bidirectional, input and output. You know, you're just an extension of the hose, as it were. But because you're a piece of hose, you get to, you know, you can condense it and drain it. And that's what's in big need right now. Because when it doesn't get drained, what happens is it compounds and then it explodes. It explodes into... it can, you know, not just wars, but it can also explode into, you know, great stagnation. Depressions are times when, the, you know, you have mass emotive states that are stuck. Sometimes plagues, sometimes earth events. But there's always something huge. Remember what we said, agony and ecstasy for the higher centers, right? There's always, you know, since human beings tend to get jarred a little bit more and pay attention a little bit more to the agony part as a collective, you know, the big things happen. The Fukushimas, you know, or the Great Depression of the 30s, you know, and even sometimes localized in parts of the world. Even some of the stuff with Russia and their, you know, the resurgence of this is due to the fact that there's a large portion of their population that is, you know, feeling really, kind of angered that this so-called capitalism and getting rid of communism didn't deliver a higher state of being. It's just a new state of essentially, you know, territorial imperative. I'm sorry?
New state of oppression.
New state of oppression, exactly, yes. Yeah, so... just, you know, czar with a different name. Mm-hmm. So.
And no shirt.
Yeah. And a hell of megalomania, you know, and narcissistic tendencies. He is just, you know, if he could hold up a mirror to himself and give it a big French kiss, he'd never do anything else. He'd be just like, oh my God, you're so good. Yeah. So. But that's a God complex for you. You know, to believe that you're infallible.
No, that's the truth for the most aristocracy. They have this God. They are God men.
Sure.
They have always been God
men. Well, the divine right of kings.
Divine right of kings, yeah, right. So they are. They have to be. You know, you can't rise to that position unless you have that.
Yeah.
You know.
And what chief feature are we talking about then in a culturally applied way? Arrogance to the nines. Okay? Arrogance to the nines. So. Did that feel complete, Tom?
Yes.
Did that answer all the parts? Okay.
Thank you.
Question, Tamara? Mm-hmm. Okay.
Did you read my my last number 3, I think it was. Did you get a chance to read that? I sent it out about a week ago.
Yeah, I saw that it came, but no, had not. Didn't.
Right. So that follows up that question.
Oh, okay. Well, we do want to acknowledge you, Ted. You managed to use some higher moving center energy last time, you know, to call in some to help, you know, sway some rains in California.
Yeah.
Good job.
Well, I guess the thing is that it's not going to do any good. It takes too much of an explanation
to
ask the question. So to get to that point, because it requires too much.
Good.
Too much background.
So then, any different questions?
Well, would relate to that somehow. I had something. Well, yeah, no, here it's, you can't get to where you want to go in the vehicle of a habit.
Well, right.
You know, and when people say, I need to go, it's like the whole transformation thing, I need to transform, be this, you don't know what the hell that is.
Right,
you know?
Exactly.
So the outcome of all this is, yeah, we just kind of let go and accept.
Precisely.
And agape is that whole sense of surrendering to your circumstances to a certain degree.
To what is.
Accepting whatever it is. Yeah, so, you know, it's like this whole thing is, well, I need to become this or that. Well, it just ends up being bullshit because, you know, you who you are, and it's finding that core, and that core, you can't understand that core with the means you got to put you here, in a sense. Or the means, you can't understand the core with the cover. Right? And we're always looking at the cover stuff, and the cover stuff's got to be better and better, but it's really the core. And that's what that's that thing I wrote about. So anyway, that was basically what I was trying to get at with that last writing.
Well, did some of the things that were said here tonight then coincide?
Well, to a certain degree, but you know, I think sometimes we're not going to get it because we don't have the meta understanding.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, we're
operating from the smaller level. And, you know, there's got to be a way to bypass that without the desire to bypass it.
Well, it's the irony of evolution, of awareness.
Yeah.
And Einstein probably said it as best as anyone ever said it, is you cannot solve a problem from inside the same, you know, dimensional paradigm that it exists in.
Right.
It takes literally ratcheting up to the meta space, mm-hmm. as you're saying.
Yeah.
And the meta space that, you know, we've invited or at least foretold for you folks as you move through your state is that of, you know, getting to that place of, yes, the surrender, accepting what is. But what the balanced man perhaps offers in the way of diversity is that when you then have access to being able to use any of the overleaf strategies, you can engage them not from a place of control or needing to make something happen, but from a place of skilled and diverse negotiation. So it's like, you know, moving through, you can still move through the rapids, completely accept that the fast water is there, and with your motion of your body or your paddle, get by all the rocks rather than crashing into every one. So that the balanced man is able to grab, you know, this multiple of paddles, but he's not trying to turn up river and say, stop flowing. Mm-hmm. He's just dealing with the flow as it is. And not even necessarily to protect himself, but to experience the exhilaration of the ride, but also being aware, during the exhilaration of the ride, rather than just, you know, being in the state of outer control or terror or ultra aggression against it. You know, I'll put a stop to this sort of thing. So the next meta-ness for you know, many of you here, because you're capable of it, and you're capable of it in part just because, having been through so many lives, you've literally had a sampling of how to use all the overleaves instinctively. And you've had enough imprinting from, and by the way, since, you know, the role is still an overlay of essence, essence is part of Tao. It isn't a role. A role is something on top of what the Tao is. So you're all of it anyway. But you're emphasizing a certain characteristic at the core or central level when you decide to take on a role when you join your cadre, and then more specifically, you know, then line up with your associations in your major cadence and you know, small group cluster. And even then, you know, whether you're talking about, you know, your own role, your essence twin, and then your casting order, and then the dominant qualities of the entity you're in, you all have flavors of it anyway. But just to what degree? Well, again, when the old soul level is, just even your human experiences, let alone your soul construction, has enough diverse experiences where it says, oh yeah, I know how to, let's see, oh yeah, I know how to run perseverance mode. Oh yeah, I know what it's like to have pragmatism. And tomorrow I'll do stoic. And then the day after I'll do ideal. And it's not even decision. It just is so fluid that it can happen at random, at will, with competence, because there is no resistance.
There's no plan,
but there's also no direct attachment to any specific set of overleaves. We'll add an adjunct into this because it does impact. We're going to reference a person here who's not here tonight, but who Tamara knows, and I think Jan knows, maybe a few of you do. Her name is Terry Bohasek. Now, Terry is a seventh level old scholar who has literally been hanging around. I mean, she could have cycled off probably 4 or 5 lives ago, you know. But she's been hanging around because she kind of likes physicality. You know, scholars can really get into that sometimes. It's like, oh boy, stuff touch. And plus, she's a fanatic with crystals and stuff, so she really enjoys herself. But there is a good example of a person who is probably the best, say, regionally actualized balanced human that we know of. But in the interim stage, we said it a couple times, but we'll make this really clear. It is not uncommon that the older a soul gets, and then add on it, the older in their lifetime they get, where they begin to have the acceptance, the indifference even, the equanimity toward life and with life, that overleaves actually, the ones that they chose for a lifetime, actually start falling away in the same way that we're describing this balanced man thing. That, in other words, there is no defined way that they feel a need to show up in. Interestingly enough, though, the more that there is that natural kind of shedding, the more that it kind of naturally gravitates to this apex of acceptance and agape. Just because you're in with the is-ness of it all. So, you know, this is a bit of a description. Sometimes you see those folks, and it's interesting to meet them. It's not to say that they're devoid of personality, but it's not a trackable personality. And it's usually not a flustered personality in the least either. But it's certainly not a managed one. So, just a little bit there. Russ, anything?
I think I'm banging my head against the 6 monad.
Actually, with you, we'd say it looks to us like you're still really in your fifth. It's you're really working on how to make sense of not so much what has happened before you, even though there's truth in that. You are definitely evaluating your past, but it'll be bigger. What you're still trying to do is you're still trying to fish out of your past. What do I pull together to try and make myself feel like I'm actually really completely worthwhile and functional? That's a fifth internal monad kind of a struggle. The sixth internal monad, there is a sense of doneness, of being almost on the other sideness. Like there's no, there was no way to turn back anyway. So you're the kind of looking into turning around saying, so what has this all been about? It's really Schopenhauer, the German philosopher, had a statement that said, you know, if a person were to just go through their life and to just let it be, and then one day just turn around and kind of just look back at the totality of their life, they would see their life purpose in the history of what they lived. And we concur with that completely. Thing about it is, most people don't look back at all. Or if they look back, they're stuck and fixated in a certain place, and therefore not considering the totality. Or they've shaded themselves because they are full of some sort of, you know, lack, regret, shame, whatever about it. But when a person is capable to do that, the great aha, and sometimes the transcendent ha-ha, when you just go, oh, Jesus, how hilarious was that? So, and that's a higher intellectual experience, by the way. Is when a person can literally look at, you know, at a life transcendently, acknowledging how painful every piece was, but see, if you will, the cosmic humor in it. So, that's a place that, if that is, by the way, what we just described is the ideal, beneficial, growthful outcome of the sixth internal monad is that you come to be able to see the entirety of your trek here. And for those who have really felt like they've accomplished a life task, see it, actually see it in the breadcrumbs that have been laid along the path. Appreciate it, relish it, celebrate it within. Gain that extra level of peace, potentially, and then turn their potential on life. You know, those the Elders for Peace, I think what they're called, the Jimmy Carter's group, that Desmond Tutu and a few other world leaders, you know, who are now all octogenarians or septuagenarians and so forth, you know, 70s, 80s, and 90s people are in this group. You can find them on the web. They're impressive bunch. That's a good example of folks who have taken, who have felt like they've gone through their sixth internal monad. They've seen that what they've accomplished, if nothing else, has been to accrue some level of respect and credibility in the world, and to lend that now, no holds barred. I mean, not arguing, not maliciously, not meanly anymore, because who cares about that? They don't. But from the standpoint of now, they don't feel any inhibition. They're not playing any politics anymore.
Exactly.
They're just speaking to what is, and from this transcendent place. And sometimes there's, you know, you happen to run into and be fortunate enough to run into that grandfatherly or grandmotherly figure, who's the one on the block who's always serving cookies and always, you know, has a parley of people, you know, on their front porch who they're serving iced tea or chatting at, or they're down at the bus stop and laughing with somebody and so forth, who when you walk away from them, your whole being has had a vibrational input of like high potency vitamin C. You just go, ah. You know, that's the place. That's the greatest potential of experience for the individual, but then to turn around and then have that feeling of inner abundance and then be able to share it. This, one of the saddest things that we think that human most human philosophies do is the vilification of self-love and making it confused with the idea of narcissism. The simplest thing we say to anybody is like, you know all this loving that you're supposedly doing to the kids, to, you know, your community, your husband, your wife, or what have you? Where do you think that all comes from? It comes from in there. And if you do not have an abundance, you know, filled in the container, you're going through the motions of what then that really collapsed, dense, dark energy of hate, shame, fear, sadness, grief will masquerade as a show of love, but it's not a feeling of love. And so as a result, those people who shame themselves for feeling, and we're not talking about arrogance now, it's really what the best intended meaning of the concept of self-esteem was. For those of you who, you know, who have our cards, we borrowed a French term because it actually was probably the best in multiple languages we researched to encapsulate it. And it's called amour propre. And it is a state of one's of being with oneself and having that right balance of feelings of dignity that one can feel respect for their own action, but their own rights as a being, without being imposing or needing to take it from someone else, of having a love of their life, that experience of joy, exuberance, appreciation, and humility, to realize that it is not this great thing that somehow, because they're so bitchin', like the divine right of kings can sometimes even go into the real extreme of the divine right of, you know, I must be God. And have that all that right mixture where a person feels then so completely filled with self or filled with essence that there is no sense of a broken me, which is the first feeling of separation, me and broken me, let alone me and you, and you are some other thing, instead of that there's just me and other me's, and we're all connected, but we're just in our own little containers. And the extreme change in mindset that can introduce is boggling. And then the more that, of course, you know, you do what Ted was talking about, just get to the acceptance of what is, but especially the first place to have that. And it's not, and now as you get to this place, it's not even about working it. It's about just allowing it. If there's places where there's grief holding on to it, you know, cry it out. If there's still some tantrums about it, go stamp your feet, you know, go get some old dishes and throw them against the wall and curse it, because it'll eventually just stop because you'll have emptied it out. But it's that place then, of that empty spot where all appropriate self-love can manifest. And self-love then is that connection between essence and personality in the body and of the body, but also of the container of the body, which is life itself. And then it's not even doership anymore. It's beingness love. It's seventh chakra love. It's just like, wow. So, don't even have to work at it. You know, and of course, you know, we're not making up that direction. You've heard this, you know, every spiritual book for probably the last couple thousand years has basically had the same underlying messages. You know, you really can't get there through working it. You get there through, you know, surrendering it all and allowing it to work as it was intended. So.
I need to get some of the patients that Howard's looking for.
Well, you know what impatience is, of course, right? You know, the chief feature of impatience is the fear that unless you act, that unless you jump on an opportunity, there is a lack out there, and that you will then be shortchanged. You will have missed out on something. A secondary piece in there is underscored by the belief that human beings can control everything. Now, with enough physical playing resources, that there one can certainly say there is a pretty convincing illusion of that. You know, like the kings and the aristocracy, you know, with enough of that, but they literally can't. While they can control the media that feeds people what to think, they can't literally be in everybody's head and make them think certain ways. They can't make a person, you know, every one of the 7 billion people here do certain things. They can just kind of aggregate. But they can tell themselves, you know, they can tell themselves that they've got it. But that's also part of the chief feature, is to tell yourself that you're in control. Anything else?
I just want to say thank you for the subject tonight. It was really interesting.
Mm-hmm. You're very welcome. Yes. You're very welcome. Well, we hope you all have, you know, felt like you could peel away places that you've judged yourself, mm-hmm. or things that you've, unless they're just things that, you know, to hearken to your ages, you know, on your bucket list that you'd really love to have fun with. Because, you know, real fun is high vibration, as opposed to going to be entertained, you know, which is somebody else doing it for you. But other than that, there is nothing you have to do, so, or at least achieve to make yourself different. Let's be more specific and say that.
When you say have to do, you mean required to do.
Required to do. Required to do of yourself. Your internal requirements.
It's just... the only comment, we use a lot of language and sometimes we forget the definitions of the words and the multitude of and the multiple definitions of the words, and sometimes through the spiritual, maybe even through spiritual means, we're given particular phrases, and our purpose, not so much our purpose, but it would behoove us to look at different ways that different meanings for that phrase.
Just out of curiosity, which us are you referring to? We as Michael, you,
well,
you, you
well,
yourself,
I'll
or human
for
beings?
Well, I'll speak for myself then, because I think that's been sort of the dilemma I have, that I, you know, I have a lot of the stuff, I don't think, I'm not sure if people get it or not, so, but in my own mind, in my own way, right, I will see a phrase, and I'll assume that phrase meant something, and then... there's another way of looking at that phrase, and this is probably coming through this teaching, that there's other ways to look at agape or self-acceptance. So what does that mean? You know, as there's self-acceptance, oh yeah, I'm going to accept myself for who I am, or there's acceptance of the self from, you know, as a meta.
It's a state of isness.
Yeah.
It is what it is. Yeah. Rather than accept us like, oh, gee, now I like everybody. And it starts saying Disney's It's a Small World After All or some sort of nonsense like that. No, it's just that it is and you are in process with it, and that the most fluid dynamic to be in this place is to certainly feel the experiences of negotiating with it and what that's like. Because then it's experiential. And not, as you say, mandatory requirements that you can either live up to or fail at.
Well, I guess the upshot, there really is no bad experience. I mean, at one time I probably was the God King.
Just painful.
Or, you know, some priest with some big ego that was, you know, having a great old time, you know, 100 lifetimes ago or whatever, even just recently, you know. So we've been through that, and that's part of my matrix of who I am. You know, all that stuff. It's all part of the whole build of what we are right now. So, and saying, well, gee, I don't like that, or I don't like this, or I want that out of me. It needs to be integrated. I mean, integrate it by loving it at some point. And anyway. That's my comment on the whole thing. So, that's it.
You're one of our channels, Ted.
Yeah.
That's a good comment.
Yeah.
That's it's entirely appropriate. And your vector is one of the channels is to bring what you've learned to this.
Mm-hmm.
And that's entirely appropriate as well. The one key reason, and you and Stephen have talked about this, but it is worth bearing out here. The one key reason we refuse to make anyone a poobah, to use an old cartoon term, you know, in other words, a single channel, like some others did, is because we don't want experts. We want you all to cross-validate, cross-pollinate. There is a certain disease. When we talked about certainty earlier tonight, certainty from a purely transcendent space is certainty because there is a lack of attachment to anything. Most people use certainty as a way of trying to put in a concrete with steel-reinforced beams a personal truth to protect them against what they fear. There are people that are that confident and have the material resources to make things happen, to, you know, say, see, I can do anything I want. But it's coming from so many layers of Maya, chief feature, fear, all wrapped into, you know, a fist. Well, that kind of certainty is not what we wanted in our teaching. We want people, there is nothing quite like fluid flow, but along banks that you can see that you're going through. That's what the overleaves in our concepts are. They're the banks of the river. And sometimes, as we give more information to our channels, the banks, like the banks of a meandering river, will change a slight bit. It will do that various angle change that you talked about. But still the same river.
Mm-hmm.
And it's still the same basic currents you're having to negotiate. But because the shapes of things are a little different at given times, with different pieces of information, the way you negotiate them is different. And therefore, the number of channels talking about the river, as it were, and giving, making their own maps, so to speak, with their own individual materials, your own included, it adds to this aggregate. So it makes it three-dimensional instead of two-dimensional pictures. So your comments are welcome here and absolutely appropriate. All right, then. Well, we thank you all for coming. Hope that's been interesting, fun, useful.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.